Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. We're live tonight on the dynamic 4th of July. I guess you're going to be out there shooting fireworks after a while, but then we don't know. It goes all over the world. Some places don't have fireworks tonight. Okay, but it is a holiday, but I think they'll be listening anyway.
In the United States, it's a holiday.
In the United States, okay. All right, but it's live tonight on July the 4th, 2014. And we have a guest, but before I begin, I want to give out the toll-free number that anyone can call in if you want to ask questions.
Of our guest.
Yes, I would prefer you would keep your questions to the guest and not direct them to me. Okay, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And our guest tonight is Jack Churchward. Jack, you're in Florida, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I know you're ahead of us in time, but didn't remember exactly where you are.
Oh, are you seeing anything of that hurricane that went through there?
It was on the right coast, and I'm on the left coast.
Oh, okay. So you didn't notice anything?
Not much. We are getting some rain now, though.
Okay.
Yeah, you're on the Gulf side then.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, Jack Churchward is one of our authors, and he just spoke at our transformation conference, which we just had a few weeks ago. Now, I'm still recovering. Are you, Jack?
No, I had a great time. I'm recovering from getting prepared previously, but everything went fine as far as I was concerned.
It was a wonderful conference.
We had a lot of compliments.
Oh, absolutely. It was fantastic. I think it's one of the best we've had.
But my job is trying to keep everything running smoothly, and so it's work. Mm-hmm. But anything is work.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're going to have Jack tonight talk about his new book. He's been on the show before because we published one of his books, and that was his second book. But those out there who have been in metaphysics for quite a while should know his great-grandfather, who was James Churchward.
Yeah, get the names right this time.
Jack, Julie said when I introduced you, I kept switching the names around, calling you James.
Okay. They know who I'm talking about and who you're talking about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. But James Churchward is famous now. He wasn't famous whenever it happened. He was in much controversy. But he's the first one who wrote about Mu, which we now call Lemuria, the continent that was in the Pacific. And his great-grandfather wrote these books about it. And over time, he's still considered a great authority on it. But Jack has done a lot of research, and he brought back his great-grandfather's work. And we published the first book, which on Lemuria, Lifting the Veil on Moon. Mm-hmm. But now he has a second book, The Stone Tablets of Mu. And this is some information on James Churchward that has never been published. And that's what I like. I always like finding lost information and bringing it back to the public now. So we're going to talk with Jack tonight about this new book of the information that his great-grandfather had found. Okay, Jack, but first you want to tell them about yourself?
Certainly. My name's Jack. As Dolores mentioned, my great-grandfather was James Churchward. I was born and raised in Florida. I was an Eagle Scout. Joined the Navy, and after the Navy, I came back, went to college, and I've been employed as an engineer for over 30 years with an international aerospace firm. And I, after engaging in some political activities in the 90s, I suffered some personal setbacks and had some things that I went through that I wanted to overcome, and we overcame them. And I then took it upon myself to start to look at my great-grandfather's works, which lots of people had been sending me emails and asking me questions my whole life, and obviously I didn't take the opportunity to do it previously. I'd been a little busy, and anyway, my family wasn't that enamored of his theories. So a few years ago, in 2005, I started studying my great-grandfather's works and looking at what his theories were and what kind of man he was and what kind of life he led. And so in 2011, thankfully, I had the first book published, Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. And this year, the second book, The Stone Tablets of Mu, which contains copies of stone tablets found by William Niven near Mexico City, is to be printed. It's like, as Dolores mentioned, it's be the first time it'll be in print.
Yeah, because James never printed that for public, display, did he?
That's correct. He, for Christmas 1927, he gave a 38-page handwritten document to his publisher. He had just received some images of some of the tablets that William Niven had been finding in near Mexico City on his digs, and James was able to translate them in using what he had learned in India, and he became he handed this over, and it went into his publisher, Edwin Rudge. It went into his personal papers in the University of California library system and was kept there.
So you kind of organized it and put it all together, didn't you?
Well, I wanted to make sure that that the original document reached. I had read about it ever since I started my research, and so it was great to actually receive a copy. But me having a copy isn't like everybody else being able to also see a copy. So that's one of the reasons that I undertook the project to make the book available.
Yeah, because I'm always looking for lost knowledge, and this is definitely lost knowledge. But this David Niven was an archaeologist, wasn't he?
William Niven, yes.
William. I'm thinking David Niven is the movie star.
Yes.
You're having a thing with names, right?
Yeah, I am. Okay, William Niven was an archaeologist, wasn't he?
Well, moreover, he was a mineralogist and had engaged quite a bit in that. And in 1891, while he was in Guerrero State, he was visiting the governor to talk about some mining rights. And on his way out, he, after seeing some of the artifacts that the governor had collected from this area, he went out and spent, on his way back to Mexico City, he took it upon himself to explore the ruins, and I'm guessing that that's when he caught his archaeology bug.
Mm-hmm.
And
but how did he find them? You said they're more than 30 feet below the surface, aren't they?
Well, that's correct. He originally started the digs that became known as Niven's Buried Cities in 1910. When he and his family moved to Mexico City, and he opened up a storefront there. The native people who had been digging in the clay pits were selling him artifacts, and he had been selling them. And when he discovered that he could pay one of them to show him where they came from, that's when he took it upon himself to go out into the clay pits that had been mined since the time of the conquistadors to build all the buildings in Mexico City. And he found out where they were, did some survey digs, and then started on a 200-square-mile area close to Santiago Ahuizacla and Atzapalco, which were near Mexico City, where they're now suburbs of Mexico City.
Mm.
But back then, they were open land with farmers and whatnot, and he was able to make a deal with the farmer and maybe get some help from the local people that needed a a hand and they'd do the digging and he'd do the identification. From what I understand from reading his biography, he had a deal with the Mexican government so that the best of any of these artifacts he found would go to them, and others he would be able to keep and sell in his storefront so that he could continue to continue the excavations on the weekends.
Do you think he really realized what he had if he was just selling them to people?
Well, some of them were the tablets, and he didn't start finding the tablets that James discusses in the book. He didn't find any of those tablets until 1921, but those other things that he found, like incense burners and all kinds of crazy things that that showed him that there was a civilization which some people estimated to be maybe even hundreds of thousands of years old.
Oh, wow.
And so with that, he kept on digging and finding everything he could.
Because I know in the book you said he found walls, he found houses, and all kinds of things when the more he dug down.
Right. The walls, he said, some of it contained petrified wood, and he took that to mean that perhaps that these buildings were 50,000 years old. But he'd also found that the construction consisted of concrete and wood, and that there was masonry used. And additionally, some of the collapsed walls weren't completely collapsed that he discovered, and they had paintings. Murals on the walls that he said that they rivaled those of Egypt and Greece and the Babylonians. So he said that he found some really amazing things there, including a jewelry workshop complete with an oven and some very, very small, intricate molds for parts.
Wow. Well, that, you know, that always brings up the theory that, you know, Egypt, there was an association with the old ancient American and Egypt, really.
Well, that is raised in some of the coverage that I wrote about, that I write about in the book. Some of the people thought that there were Atlanteans, thought that the people were Atlanteans. Other people thought they were Lemuro Atlanteans. It was the Theosophist that wrote an article on Niven's buried cities, and they believe that some people came from the west, which were the Chinese people, and the other people came from the east, which would have been the Egyptians directly, but they believed that it was the Atlanteans, and the Atlanteans split off and went one way and settled Egypt, and the other way and settled Central America.
Yes, in my work, I found that the ones from Atlantis went to Egypt whenever Atlantis went down. That would make sense. They would go either way. And I think you said that that part of Mexico is supposed to be the remnants of Lemuria anyway, isn't it, Moo?
I don't believe that was mentioned. Well, what James did write about is that the people that were there, and he called them Mayas, not the Mayas that we're familiar with, but the Mayas of Mu. And those, what James wrote about them, were that they were the ones that left the motherland and colonized the planet and were great navigators and whatnot. Mm. But they were the Nakhal Brotherhood were the keepers of the knowledge. And he related that the tablets that Niven had discovered, he was able to decipher and place them into that context as being part of the knowledge and wisdom of the Nakhal Brotherhood.
Because, you know, I've had others on the show who talk about, in the Smithsonian Institute, there's a lot of things that they will never let anyone know about, and some of them were discovered in the Grand Canyon that were Egyptian artifacts. So I think that goes along with the idea there was a lot of other people here that nobody, the historians don't talk about.
Well, some of the findings that Mr. Niven found were many small statues. In fact, the number is in the thousands of small statues that he found it in the one ancient riverbed of. He said that they were Arabic types, people from Africa, people from Southeast Asia and Asia, just a complete metropolitan mix of people, many different cultures and many different faces of many different peoples. And these were all in that age range of tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands years old, as one archaeologist put it.
Hmm. Yeah, no, in the book you make a lot about this one you call the Little Chinaman. He's a little statue that looks like a Chinaman.
James made quite a bit about that, and so did Gavin Menzies. And Gavin Menzies, in his book about 1422, or the book about how the Chinese discovered the Earth.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, that was also covered. The Chinese legation to Mexico visited Mr. Niven in his storefront in Mexico City. And as he's going through, he met the article in the newspaper from the time mentions that all the dress on the people were Chinese, and he pointed out Chinese writing and the fact that some of the incense burners were exactly as the same. And so he said that these were obviously Chinese people that Mr. Niven had discovered.
And the ruins were, you said, about 30 feet down.
Correct. And they were over some it was incredible. 2,000 square miles is something that they mentioned that these ruins were found. It was an enormous city from what I've read.
Hmm. And you said that they went through the levels. They even found geological things like the remains of volcanic eruptions as they went down, didn't you?
Correct. The first layer is from my reading. The first layer was covered by volcanic ash. The next layer was covered by the next layer of habitation was covered by some kind of flood, and then there's one more layer that was covered by 2 or 3 feet of other earth and boulders and whatnot. So
well,
yes, they were quite deep.
Kind of gives you a geological time frame right there.
Right.
Yes.
Historical happening.
Yeah. I'm surprised that, well, I know the archaeologists didn't give your great-grandfather that much credibility, but I'm surprised they wouldn't have wanted to investigate this more.
Well, there might be some other reasons to that, and being that the location of the tablets is not known.
But,
I mean, there were some that Mr. Niven was attempting to remove from Mexico that he rightly believed were his and that should be going with him back to Texas when he moved back to Austin. And from what I understand from my reading, that he was unable to get the permits and took it upon himself to very carefully pack everything up and bury it in someone's yard in Veracruz.
Oh.
I don't know who would know whose yard it was, and but all those tablets and all those artifacts have been buried in in someone's property.
In Mexico, or who knows?
In Mexico, near Veracruz. In Veracruz.
You're going to have everybody seeking buried treasure now.
Well, they were. It's not like I'm making this up. It came from Niven's biography.
Uh-huh.
Buried Cities and Forgotten Gods. He mentions it very quickly in near the end of the book.
Have you thought about going down there and seeing if you could find it?
I wouldn't know where to start. I have engaged. I have started to engage the Mexican government because I discovered some letters in my great grandfather's nephew. I obtained some of his correspondence a few years ago, and was able to see in there some correspondence from the Mexican government. They were very interested in if he knew any information about Niven's artifacts or Niven's tablets or anything. And eventually it got to the point where I believe Howard Kersey, my great-grandfather's uncle, was actually taken or invited to the New York consulate of the Mexican government to discuss whether or not the artifacts were available or around or anything. And from what I understand, he would write put down essentially what was his reply. And each time he wrote back that he didn't know anything about it, didn't have any of their correspondence, and didn't have any of the artifacts. Mm-hmm. So I hope that with an inquiry to the Mexican government, we can interact somewhat and maybe find out maybe they have already found them and that they're in a library or a museum somewhere on display.
Because and you said they took everything that he had in the storefront, then it was taken or what?
No, I believe he packed it up to take it back to Texas with him.
That's the part he packed up, what he had in the store.
Correct. But all the best of all the artifacts he had already provided to the National Museum of Mexico City, in Mexico City.
Yeah, I thought he said in the book that there were some in a museum, and that's the one in Mexico City?
Yes, I believe so. Some of the
other...
I believe that more of the implements as opposed to the tablets. The incense burners and the other things that he found.
So, the majority of it then, we don't know where it went then.
That's correct. And lots of people have been looking for it. And like I said, even including the Mexican government. So, hopefully, they'll know if they found it, or maybe somebody's already went out in their backyard and dug them up, and maybe they're on display somewhere.
Yeah, they probably didn't know what they had.
Oh, it sounds like a basis of a movie to me.
Well, that was what I was saying when you sent the manuscript to me. I said, well, show us on a map or something where these are, and you're going to have everybody going there. But you said it wouldn't do any good because Mexico City is built over that location now.
Yes, quite. The urbanization of the Mexico City has been skyrocketing over the last 80 years now, and it's just it's all a concrete jungle. But I imagine that along the way, that while they were digging foundations for different buildings and infrastructure, that they probably ran into some of the artifacts, and hopefully those were kept and put in the museums
and studied. But it's hard to say if they went down 30 feet.
That's true.
On the foundation.
Well, but his dig site, he had it exposed. I mean, what happened to that? I mean, did they just cover it back up and then start building on top of it?
Quite possibly.
Wow.
I was thinking if they were putting up buildings, did they go down 330 feet?
Well, if they were digging pipes or subways or something like that, they might have intersected some of it down there.
Well, I remember seeing something on the news, this has been several years ago, where they were digging subways down in Mexico City, and they came across a whole lot of stuff. And they had archaeologists in there to see it, and they said it was like lost findings. But I don't know where I saw that now, but it was the remains of a lost city. So that would make sense if that's how they would find it, by digging like that. Yeah. And when we were in Athens, they said every time somebody digs in their garden, they find something.
Yes, I'm sure of that.
They said if they do, they're supposed to, if they're building a building or anything, they're supposed to stop everything and call the archaeologist. So they said if they're digging in their garden and find something, they just cover it all back up. They don't tell anyone. They didn't want anybody coming in there. Messing with their yard.
I don't blame them.
Only a lot of places still left like that in the world. But to me, it's the most amazing about how old it is. Because that would be a civilization older, would be older than the pyramids, older than Egypt.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
So it kind of throws all the archaeologists' datelines out the window.
But I'm not sure that he had any of the tools to accurately date it. For instance, his association with the man who owned the lease on the Petrified Forest, he had earlier in his career had gone into partnership with him while he was at one of the mineral shows that went during his activities as a mineralogist, and they opened up a storefront in New York City. He was selling some of the Petrified Forest artifacts, the petrified wood and whatnot, and he took it upon himself to, from the dating of that petrified wood as 50,000 years, that's why he gave the estimated age of those to be 50,000 years, because he found some petrified wood there.
Has it ever been any of these things, have they been retested or redated to confirm or dispute?
Well, I'm not sure that there was any organic material available. Mm-hmm. Usually they use maybe charcoal from a fire or something that's in the in situ with the artifact, so that they can properly analyze it. And I don't believe any. And I'm not sure that there's tools that have been available to them.
But these little figures, because they couldn't really date them, all they know is they didn't fit with the history of all these different races that they represent.
That's correct.
You know, I can remember, Erich von Däniken, when his book first came out, what was that, the 60s, 70s? One of his first books, he talked about going down in caves, and I think it was in Mexico, and this was a place where there was very dangerous because they had all these tribes that didn't want a white man in there. And they said he went down in these caves and found all kinds of little figures. And it's in one of his early books that has pictures. I wonder if they could be along the same thing.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that, Erich von Däniken doing that?
No, I'm not aware of that, no, ma'am.
I'll have to look it up because I have all of his old books. But there was one, he said they could only had a certain length of time to stay down there because the tribes didn't want them in that area, and it was very dangerous. So that would be digging down. Caves would be way down in the earth.
That'd be, yes.
Could be the same city if it was that big. We're sitting on all this stuff, and we don't even know it.
Exactly. We have no idea.
What's underneath us in the earth? We were in Newgrange in Ireland. That's older than the pyramids. So we're finding a lot of things that are older than the pyramids.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they're all together. Well, it was above ground, but not by much.
Yeah. But I think that's fascinating. And I really like your curiosity, too, that you want to explore, to bring this information back.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm taking the opportunity to research my great-grandfather's works due to all the questions I've been asked and the fact that I did take quite a negative approach earlier in my life. My family was not my family was never fans of my great-grandfather. And
yeah.
We're not very happy with him and the way he behaved. And I believe they had it out for him when he tried to discuss when he wrote his books and whatnot. They didn't believe a word of it, and that was what was passed down to me.
At least they weren't destroyed, anyway.
No, there are a few things still available.
So how does the family feel about you resurrecting all of this?
I'm the last church ward, other than my son. So I could talk to my sister, but in fact, I sent her a copy of the book already. But I hope that I haven't found any person that, it's not like I'm solidifying his work,
yeah,
adding any validity. I'm just taking it upon myself to research it and provide the results of my research to whomever might wish to read further information.
Mm-hmm. Well, I admire you for doing it, because it is bringing back information that could have been easily lost. I can only imagine what James Churchward felt when everybody was criticizing him.
Well, I know that he got some very unfavorable remarks, but then on the other hand, he did have quite a following of individuals who believed in him.
Well, that's the trailblazers. That's what they do.
Yes, the pioneers get the arrows, and the settlers get the homes.
What was the last part?
And the settlers get the homes.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Because I remember in the first book you republished here, that James Churchward found this information when he was living in Tibet among these priests. So they lived there so long they allowed him to look into the ancient records and things.
Well, he wrote in his books that it was in India that he had
India.
Discovered.
I thought it was in Tibet.
Well, he said that later on he had seen various manuscripts in Tibet, but in most of his books he took it upon himself to keep the location of the monastery safe and not tell anybody. But in the 1990s, one of his old books that was a gift to his nephew Howard Carsey, and was only supposed to be meant to be given to Howard Carsey, wasn't supposed to be made public, was published by Brotherhood of Life Publishing, and it's called the Books of the Golden Age, and in it he does reference the name of the monastery in Tibet. Unfortunately, I have looked at maps. I have I've spoken with one of the leaders of one of the main schools of Tibetan Buddhism, and he has mentioned that he's also looked into it after I mentioned it to him, and he had spoken with all his abbots and sent out the feelers, and there was nothing came back to say, yes, there it's still there, or yes, it was there. Because it was under James. James also believed that the monastery that was up there, it wasn't a Tibetan Buddhist monastery. It was still run by the Nikal Brotherhood from the, you know, the earliest stages of time.
Well, that's like the Vatican, you know, people can't get in there, and it has all these records. So some of these places did preserve the records over thousands of years, and he became friends with them. He lived with them. So that was how he eventually got to see these, and they had to be translated. But yet people thought he was making everything up.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about then versus now, and how research was done and what he was doing and traveling. I mean, even the traveling was much different than it is now.
Yeah.
What he would have undergone to do all of this.
And to live in those places for such a long time to get the information.
All the evidence.
What?
Well, all the evidence I've found indicates that he spent at least 10 years, maybe 9 or 10 years in Sri Lanka, and own tea plantations there.
Because you don't have to live among these people a long time to get their trust, to let them let you see these things.
Well, see, that alone would have put him in a really different category. He's gone to all these places, and so people they would have a hard time identifying with that, probably.
Yeah. Not in the world at those days. Nobody went anywhere.
Right.
They didn't have airliners or anything. I think it was all done by ship or walking.
Yeah.
But then to have, he found all of this, and then to have everybody be criticizing him and saying he was making it up, because it couldn't have been a continent out in the Pacific.
Well, it couldn't have been that many people against it. More correspondence that I found from from Howard Karas. He said that in 1955, they were still selling 1,000 copies of The Lost Continent of Mu every year.
Mm.
And that was...
Well, it has survived anyway.
Correct. And he died in 35, so 36 actually. So 19 years after his death, they were still selling copies of his books. And, well, actually, they're still selling them today.
Yeah, they're selling your edition.
Well, you're selling my edition, but
yeah.
There's also other editions out there.
Mm-hmm.
On other,
but you can say some of the ones that are being printed don't have the authority to do that.
Well, from what I understand, the copyright was turned over, was signed over to my father or myself in the 70s. And that was for, I think, The Lost Continent of Mu and maybe one other. And I haven't checked into it, but everybody's publishing them, and I'm not sure that I could really do anything to bring them to justice, or if there is such a thing as bringing them to justice. I'm glad that they're bringing out the information and providing it to everyone. But
as long as they're doing it correctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, that really is a trailblazer there.
Oh, yeah.
And even have your own family think you're crazy.
Well, but there again, see, he was gone. He didn't take the family with him, did he?
Oh, no, he didn't. Actually, after he'd been married about 10 years, I believe he had a falling out with his wife and my grandfather, who was his son, and they parted ways and went in different directions.
Yeah, she said, you're never home. You're always traveling. That would make sense. Hmm. But anyway, it is it's wonderful information. And that's what I liked about this latest book, is that it's information that has never been published before. But we can't have everybody going down to Mexico City and start digging up the streets.
You might have some very angry landowners.
They go in somebody's backyard and start digging it up. Because you give the location, but you think it'd still be pretty hard to find.
Well, actually, I entered the names, and Google Earth just popped the names right up. I mean, they're still there, but what's the problem with it is that they've... paved it over.
Yeah, so that'd be a little difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, everybody would be going down there.
Take a jackhammer with you people if you go.
Was there anything valuable, like gold or jewels or anything, that Niven found?
Well, he did find, he was actually his major occupation, I guess, before he became the archaeologist, was as a mineralogist. And he did find mines and worked to get them open and running and actually work them with the workforce. And in one case, he actually worked on getting a boat run down the Balsas River, I believe to the Pacific, so that he could, because they couldn't get a railroad into the area. So he was working on obtaining a boat route so that they can ship the ore down the river and get it out of the area. That was the hard part. They could find the gold, they just couldn't get it out of there.
Oh,
and I guess it was a little difficult to take it out on mule train or on donkey back, especially with the level of bandits and outlaws that were there at the time. It wasn't very safe.
But so, when he was down digging up the cities, did he find, gold and jewels and things or anything like that? Or was it just the little artifacts?
Well, I did. He did mention that he did find a goldsmith shop, and there were still some gold in some of it. I'm not sure that he found it. He doesn't go into length and itemize what he had found, and I don't remember reading about any gold or jewels or precious metals. Other
Speaking
precious
of Indiana
metals.
Jones.
Yes.
Well, I think you have found your calling anyway, that you're got determined to get this information out.
Well, I wanted to make it available so that everybody could see a more complete picture of my great-grandfather.
Well, what are you working on now? Have you stopped?
I took it upon myself to take a short break. I've been talking with my wife, and perhaps the next point of research will be about the Great Uyghur Empire and how that has been mentioned. The Great Uyghur Empire from Central Asia. James wrote about it in most of his books. He wrote that there was a Great Uyghur Empire in Central Asia, and that was the first and primary colony of the lost continent of Mu in Asia.
Oh, that's where they went then.
And it was, unfortunately, he says it was wiped out, but he mentions that they did find some wonderful artifacts about him. It's also mentioned by Edgar Casey, and there is other literature about it. In fact, some of the Bosnian pyramids there, I've heard talk that perhaps they think that elements of the Great Uyghur Empire went there and built them.
Yeah, I know we've heard of pyramids in China.
And then in Bosnia.
He has Bosnian one, too. The Bosnian one, we had someone come at our UFO conference to speak about that. And they're just now beginning to excavate them, finding tunnels. But I also heard that they'd found pyramids in China, but they weren't letting people come into that area.
Well, those are near Xi'an, China, which was the ancient capital of both the Han and the Tang Dynasty. And those, they're not really pyramids. They're more like flat-topped mounds of earth. Closer to, rather than looking like Egyptian pyramids, they look closer to what is found in Mexico. But
yeah,
those pyramids, although they're saying that they're tens of thousands of years old, most of them, there are local records and knowledge that those came from the Han Dynasty, which was 200 BC to 200 AD, and the Tang Dynasty, which was in the 8th and 9th century. So they don't reach back to it as far as that. At least that's what they say on the ground there.
They're not as old as the ones they found in Mexico.
That's correct.
Hmm. Well, to me, I think that would make sense then, that from Mexico they spread out.
Well, that's what Le Plongeon believed. Augustus Le Plongeon believed that that's where human civilization began in Central Asia, in Mexico.
Oh, they always say it began in Africa.
Yes.
It started in Asia then, which would make sense.
Well, there's also a camp that believes that civilization came from Central Asia. Uh-huh. And they call it the Uyghur Empire. But I'm not sure if they've got things a little goofed up.
Well, they said the alphabet and all those things began in Asia. But, of course, they had the different kind than we do. But a lot of the things, if the culture just sprung all of a sudden there, and they were able to develop a lot of skills very quickly. That's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. So you said you want to start working on that. And what's involved when you start doing?
Well, essentially, I need to read lots of stuff.
You got to be able to retain lots of stuff too.
Absolutely, make not lots of little notes and little notebooks here and there. Hopefully, they'll all stay in one big file, and then sit down and organize it and just write it out. Like, that's the easy part, right?
Yeah.
Is this something that has not been published before?
I'm not aware of any writing about the Uyghur Empire. Now, maybe there are scholarly works that describe the historical Uyghur Empire from the 8th century in which was Mongolia. But I don't believe...
Mongolia, where Mongolia is now?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And those, actually, they were chased out by the Kyrgyz. And the Uyghurs went westward. Some of them even studying or settling as far away as Bulgaria and Hungary. And actually, the Magyars believe that they're descended from the Uyghurs. So that
Magyar.
Takes on...
I'm thinking Magyar, I think, is associated with Hungarians, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. But so, really, they're all interconnected, I guess, when you come down to it.
They believe they're a Turkic people descended from the Great Uyghurs, the Great Uyghur Empire that were chased out by the Kyrgyz, and they eventually settled in what is now called Eastern Turkestan, or the Chinese government calls it Xinjiang.
Mm.
But more even went even farther west and settled parts of Europe.
I know we were in Istanbul. They were talking about how old that is there,
mm-hmm.
The Turkish Empire. That always has fascinated me, you know, the ancient world, the ancient things like that. So, Karen, you're right in the middle of it.
Absolutely. I enjoyed studying and finding out how... perceptions change, and our thoughts about history have changed over the years.
Uh-huh. I love research. To me, that's the meat of everything.
And you love history, too.
Oh, yeah, I love history, and I love research. I like digging through a book. I said, when I'm writing a book, I could spend all day at the university library looking for one little tiny thing. That, to me, is heaven. Another part of people wouldn't understand that.
I understand that well, yes. It's just like dotting the I's and crossing the T's, just
uh-huh.
getting everything done. And as an engineer, I'm a detail person.
Yeah, you would be.
But I used to go to the university library here in Arkansas and do my research. But I used to see all these kids in there, the college students, and I kept wondering, do they really realize what they have there? Because, you know, they weren't paying much attention. But nowadays, the kids do research on the Internet. They don't know what real research is.
Yeah, it's much easier to do a text search on a Google PDF than it is to go and dig it out of the book.
Yeah. Because I used to have the library find me books they didn't have through interlibrary loan. And sometimes there'd be only one copy in existence that would be in the Library of Congress. And they would send it for me to read it. To me, that's heaven.
Well, that's another reason why I wanted to make this book, the copies of stone tablets found by William Niven near Santiago Ahuizacla near Mexico City. Those long titles are getting me. But
no,
this,
we had to cut the title down.
Yes, quite.
But you spoke at the Transformation Conference, and I think you had a really good reception.
Thank you.
And you did a workshop after that, didn't you?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm also starting to do a little more research on the side to work on a workshop called Lemuria or Mu. And as I was asked that question at the conference, what's the difference between Lemuria and Mu? Well, if I had time, I could probably give a good answer, but we really didn't have the time then. And it would take a while to differentiate how Lemuria is different than Mu, but there are subtle differences.
I've always thought it was the same, just a different name, but I always thought Mu was the same thing as Lemuria.
There are so many different versions of Lemuria that I've found, it makes it to make a blanket statement, I guess you can make that blanket statement, but there's just so many different theories of Lemuria.
Would it be, are you maybe indicating that maybe Lemuria was part of Mu?
I don't believe so. Okay. There are different theories. For instance, one theory believes that Mu existed only as a zoological area. And another theory later thought that Lemuria was the birthplace of the human species in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And another theory has it that Lemuria was part of a problem of a continent that streaked across the Pacific Ocean and crashed into the United States and glommed itself, part of it glommed itself onto California. And it just, it's all kinds of, all over the place, theories about Lemuria.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to look into the various theories that are out there and see what they have in common and make a comparison to Mu and let people make up their own minds whether or not Lemuria is Mu.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were in Hawaii. They like to say that is remnants of Lemuria, especially the island of Kauai. When we were on Kauai, that's the oldest one. And you said you felt things when we were there.
Oh, that island talks to you.
Vibrations and frequencies there. But they like to say that those islands are part of the remnants of Lemuria.
Well, I'd like to hear any information. In fact, some one person did come up to me at the Transformation Conference and mentioned that an archaeologist had just recently discovered some new ancient artifacts that put the history back a lot earlier. The lady didn't know the exact details and passed me along a phone number, and I need to get in touch with them and find out just how far back these new discoveries put them.
In Hawaii?
Correct, yes.
Hmm. Because a lot of that is new land, like the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like there's a ring.
They specifically said Kauai was the one that was, because it was the mother island.
Uh-huh.
And they were specifically saying that. And I thought the islands were all the same age. But yeah, they were all the same. It was like, why wouldn't they all be that? But they were specifically saying Kauai.
Hmm. Well, anyway, it's all interesting. And this is what I like. That's what I like to publish, lost knowledge, lost information. Okay, Jack, well, we're coming up to the time we're going to sign off. The hour has gone very fast. Tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to contact you.
Well, the easiest way is my website is jack.churchward.com. And there are links on there to all my other resources. There's a page on each of my books. I've got links to my YouTube page. An even shorter one would be j.churchward.com. Provides links to everything. That's just for links. And you can get to links, all my links there.
And that's Churchward, Churchward.
That's correct. j.churchward.com.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then if they want to get a hold of you, and maybe they know something out there that might help you.
Yes,
they
please.
They know they're going to have questions.
Absolutely, please.
And the
please.
Book is, you said it's available now.
Well, it's due to be here on Monday, my understanding.
Yeah, we was hoping to be here for the conference, but it had all kinds of things folded up.
I don't know. It had its own timeline, Jack.
Absolutely, I understand. Karma.
But it'll be here, and then it'll be available. It'll be in the stores,
right.
And probably on Amazon, mm-hmm. and on our website, it can be ordered.
Right.
And it's called The Stone Tablets of Mu. Okay. Well, it's time to sign off now. Thanks for coming on, Jack.
No, thank you very much. I had a wonderful time both at now and the Transformation Conference.
Okay. You keep writing and doing research.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. Good night.